I don't know about all of you, but I know in my own prayer, anytime I go to the Lord with a petition or some sort of need, it's usually because something has happened. It's not just out of the blue that it seems like the apostles today, out of the blue, just all of a sudden say, Lord, increase our faith. At least that's how the lectionary begins. We've skipped about four verses since last week in Luke's gospel, where we had the parable of the rich man and Lazarus. And in those four verses, Jesus kind of sums up everything that he has been talking about for the last several weeks as we've gone through this gospel. So we've heard about the rich man and Lazarus, the prodigal son, the commandment to take up our cross and follow the Lord. And he summarizes all of that, telling his disciples to avoid the temptations of sin, to trust in God, to seek his mercy. And then he kind of finishes it off by telling them, when you've been sinned against, forgive your brother. Even if he should sin against you seven times in one day, if he comes back to you and apologizes, forgive him seven times. And at that, the command to forgiveness, the disciples say, Lord, increase our faith. Because they realize that forgiving as God forgives is beyond them, that they don't have the strength in and of themselves to do it. They're recognizing the challenge, the cost of discipleship. And then he goes into this whole image of the master and the servant, which, if we look at it, can be a little bit unsettling, because it's like, what is he getting at? Is he trying to somehow or other condone servitude, condone slavery, saying we should just be like that, that it's okay that this happens? And the answer is obviously no. He's doing what he does throughout the Gospels and taking some sort of image that's very common to the people in front of him, very common to the people of that time, and using it to teach a truth about God. In that time, servitude was very common. He's not condoning it, but he's just stating a fact. There are servants around, and everybody knows that the servant serves the master. And everybody accepts that, because they also knew that the servants knew that everything they had, everything they lived by, everything they existed for, in a sense, was from the master. So he's challenging his apostles, he's challenging each one of us as a disciple to realize that God, who is our creator, is in a sense also our master. And that's difficult for us to swallow because we live in a society that prides itself on self-sufficiency and independence. And our Lord is saying, be dependent on me. Realize that I have given you everything and I'm calling you to receive everything only from me, to be dependent on what I can do for you and not only on yourself, and then to be available to give that love that I'm giving you to others. And I think if we really consider what kind of challenge he is calling us to, then we can echo the apostles and also say, Lord, that's pretty tough. Increase my faith. Which causes us to ask then, what is faith? What is he getting at? And I think an easy way to consider what faith is to reflect on the fact that it's basically letting God, letting his divine life dwell in us so that through us, it can reach others. And we can only grow in that faith if we immerse ourselves in God. If we let ourselves, like a drop of water, be plunged into, so to speak, the ocean of his grace. And that's prayer. I think we know that there are kind of three types of prayer. We have our individual private prayer, we have our communal prayer, and then we have our liturgical prayer. And each one has a value and a certain role, and each one should be part of our life as someone who's striving to follow the Lord, who said, apart from me, you can do nothing. Because it's through prayer that we remain as branches connected to the vine. I think if we make time for prayer, if we give it priority over our iPhone, our TV, the Bengals and the Buckeyes, our checkbook, if we give prayer priority, then we can strengthen that bond between ourselves and God. We can strengthen ourselves in that relationship of creature to creator, of one who depends on God and doesn't seek just to be independent. Obviously, there are many ways that we can pray privately, many opportunities to pray as a community, and then that great opportunity that we have that we're all gathered here today for, to enter into prayer as a whole church liturgically. And we can ask ourselves, do we take advantage of all of those opportunities that God is giving us? Can I do a little more to give God a better priority, more time in my life? Do I encounter God outside of Sunday Mass? How often do I spontaneously go through the day and thank Him for the blessings that He's given me, or present my needs before Him? Do I ask Mary to help me understand the mysteries of salvation, of what her son did, by reflecting on the mysteries of the Rosary with her? I think we could agree that we have a parish that's very blessed with an active prayer life, an active prayer schedule. And do we take advantage of it? Have I ever gone to Mass on a day off or during a lunch break? Do I spend some time, even maybe just a couple minutes on my way home from work on Wednesdays, to swing by adoration for a few minutes and thank the Lord for the day? Do I pray for the needs of our parish and of our community, of those who are sick, those who have died, those who've asked me to pray for them? Do I pray for healing in my relationship with God and healing in my relationships with others by taking advantage of reconciliation? Do I depend on God? Finally, we should ask ourselves, have I come here today to go to Mass or to pray the Mass? This is our opportunity, united to the whole church, to take our lives and the lives of those we're close to, everything that we are, our struggles, our sufferings, our trials, our joys, what we're thankful for, what we need help with, and to unite that to the cross of Christ. Do I put myself with the host on the paten? Do I realize that I am immersed in the chalice with the blood of Christ? Do I seek the grace that comes from consciously uniting my life to His? All of these considerations, taken together with this gospel today, beg a final question. I pray, but it doesn't seem like God hears me. I asked for something easier than uprooting a mulberry tree and planting it in the ocean, and even that didn't happen. So is our Lord telling me that my faith is small, that it's not even as big as a mustard seed? And I think the answer is in the first reading. Habakkuk is there having this discussion with God, where Habakkuk realizes that he's praying, he's asking for something, and it seems like God doesn't hear him. And God says, the vision still has its time, presses on to fulfillment, and will not disappoint. If it delays, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not be late. And the vision that he's speaking about is what our Lord himself promised, that there will be a new heaven and a new earth, that through the resurrection, he will triumph over what's wrong with this world. We believe that all of the prayers ever uttered for all time are answered by God in the resurrection. For the resurrection is God's perfect answer. It's the only thing that can make it make sense. So now, let us go and pray at the altar of the cross so that we can live from the resurrection.